thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
It is.
Here's John Williams.
What's the current temperature again, Ryan?
Oh, man, just got rid of it. 58.
58 degrees. By my phone, we are going to drop 45 degrees in the next 48 hours.
Is that what Siri tells you?
That's what my... I have this app on my phone, and it shows me the next 10 days of weather. I look at it way too much, and on this one, it says that Friday morning, it's going to be, I don't know, single digits or something. Well, take whatever it is right now, subtract 45, and in the next 48 hours, that's where we will be.
This weather's awesome, but it does feel a little weird, doesn't it?
It does.
It feels like this isn't right. It feels...
That's it. That's exactly what Brenda said this morning. I got up. She was up before me. I said, how is it out there? She goes, it's weird. You know, God bless. We're all happy for warm weather, but it's... You're right. It feels like...
Especially after the 2 weeks between Christmas and
we should not be having this, and you almost don't want to enjoy it because it just seems wrong. If somebody said, hey, look, here's $1,000, and you go, wow, $1,000. Where did you get this? Because I'm not sure I can enjoy that. That's kind of where I am on this.
Yeah.
I'm like, but then we shouldn't be doing that. And in this case, of course, I'm thinking of carbon emissions and styrofoam cups.
Let's just enjoy it.
I can't.
I told my wife yesterday when I came home, I said, the snow is gone. It had all completely melted, everything. There wasn't even a trace of it anywhere. It was just gone.
What's up, Elif? No, your microphone's not on, Elif, and I can't seem to help you on my side.
I helped myself there. I just bought a jacket in November or December that is like Sherpa on the inside, but it's denim on the outside. You can't wear it in regular Chicago winter, so I'm just going to wait 6 months.
Wait a minute, because it's a cool weather jacket?
It's a warm weather jacket. Yeah, I mean, it's like 60s weather jacket.
So you could wear it today, which is nice.
Yes, but it's supposed to drop to the 30s in the evening, and I know I'm going to walk.
Yeah, no kidding. By the end of this show, I mean, one more time, Ryan, what do you show on your...
Well, it says by later today. I mean, we could be in the 30s by 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. So for the people who, you know, went with a windbreaker into work, they're going to be in for a rude surprise when they head out to go home.
And I had a jacket warmer than I needed, and I thought, oh, geez, this is the one day I don't have to, but I might on the way home. So I guess I'm glad I had a heavier than I normally do jacket. Harvey Weinstein was attacked at a restaurant in Arizona. I'll play the audio for you. We had to clean it up. There's a bunch of bleeps, and I don't know if you'll be able to hear, but the video shows, and you can almost hear in this audio clip, Weinstein is walking out of a restaurant. He's in Scottsdale, Arizona. I guess it's a nice place. Appears as though he's eaten a meal. He's with his sober coach. I didn't know that's a thing, but I guess it's somebody, if you have the resources, that follows you about, and they keep you from ordering the Chardonnay. So he's with his sober coach. They're walking out. People recognize him. Hey, there's Harvey Weinstein. What would you do if you saw a Harvey Weinstein in a restaurant? What would you do if you saw an O.J. Simpson at the restaurant? What would you do if you saw Bill Cosby, somebody publicly vilified? Would you say, I'm just going to sit here and ignore them? I'm going to sit here and glare at them? Or I'm actually going to go up and pop them one? This guy comes up and slaps Weinstein in the face a couple of times. He sort of peppers his face with light taps, pap, 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 like that. It's not a whole cold cock whap like that.
I hope he was charged, was he?
He was not. And as much as I think you might applaud this guy or you want to do this guy or, you know, a lot of us have thought, oh, what a terrible person. You just want to smack him. You wish these ladies had smacked him. And hey, there's your opportunity. Harvey Weinstein's right there. He's walking out of the restaurant. I could just go up and give him a piece of my mind. And this is what happened.
Don't do that, man. Don't do that.
You're a piece of women. Get the out of here.
It went on from that. Every expletive that we did our best to delete there, but you get the sense of it. So that's a guy just coming up and harassing him. And the guy that's sort of slapping Harvey and lobbing these expletives at him, there's another person there who's videotaping it. So his buddy, this, I presume, sober coach, is up trying to keep the person from videoing this because it's just humiliating and who knows where this is going to go. And in fact, that guy has a conversation with the person holding the phone. And it goes along the line of, hey, get out of here, put that down. And then the person taunts him. Really? What are you going to do? What are you going to do about it? Because if either of these guys do anything to defend themselves, it will get exponentially worse for them.
And he can't say, I'm Harvey Weinstein anymore.
No, right. I guess that would have been, hey, who do you know who I am? Well, this guy sure as hell knows who he is. That's why he's assaulting him. I mean, literally, what Corey Lewandowski did to that reporter on the convention floor was not what this guy was doing to Harvey Weinstein. He was literally smacking his cheek with his hand. Pop, pop. It feels so personal that way.
I don't know if I would have a reaction to being in the room with somebody like that. I think I would just feel awkward being in their presence.
I would, but would you applaud? What do you think should happen to the guy that's slapping Harvey Weinstein in the face? A, he gets a trophy and his own show. Or B, he goes to jail. You call the police and you have him arrested. That's technically assault. If it was a man on a woman or a man on a more sympathetic man, or if that was a senior citizen, you could, there's a million ways you could parse this. The guy doing the slapping gets arrested.
You can't walk up to and assault someone just because they're despicable.
I totally agree.
I agree. You're not suddenly above
the law.
The law, exactly. You're not above the law. And
just like he's not, and he should be held accountable for his actions, and so should this person.
There are times, though, where I say, okay, fine, but here's where I live sometimes. Okay, I know I'm not supposed to do this, but it's the right thing to do. And I'm willing to go to jail for it, you know? It's sort of like a twisted version of the courage of your convictions. I know I'm going to suffer for this, but I feel so strongly about it, I'm going to do it anyway. I don't think this is that. This doesn't teach Harvey a lesson. Nobody's made whole again. It's just stupid. You know, it's just impulsive.
And also, that guy just sounds obnoxious.
I know.
Leave him alone.
And that's it. If you're going to do it, it's just, you don't have to stand there and call him an effer. You know, come up with something better than that. I wonder, for instance, I think about this a lot when there's a Bill Cosby or somebody who's vilified around the world. I wonder what it is like for them each day when they get up. I wonder, for instance, what it is like for Harvey Weinstein when the Golden Globes are on. I wonder if he watched it. I wonder if he read the press coverage. I wonder what he makes of the Me Too movement. I wonder just how those people internalize that.
And how they really feel and not what they have to say to the public. Hmm. He can't say, oh, this Me Too movement's ridiculous. That would hurt his image. It would hurt him trying to redeem himself.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, what he really thinks about it.
Yeah, he doesn't get to say. Well, he had his opportunity there, and he just kind of took it. That's how mighty how far the mighty have fallen, right? Because there's Harvey Weinstein. You know, you don't touch him. You don't talk to him. In fact, he gets to assault you, and you have to be quiet about it. And now, a random stranger comes up, humiliates him, slaps him in the face, TMZ posts it, and the world cheers. And you can't do anything about it. How weird that must be to go from there to there, you know, in a matter of weeks, in days, really. Yesterday, we visited with that guy, Christian Piccolini. I don't know if you were listening to our show from the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. We were at the Saturday Night Live Experience, and you should be there someday, too. We invited Christian Piccolini to come on, and he's the guy who wrote that book, White American Youth. It was about his descent into the white hate movement and how he got out. We could still be talking to that guy for the stories he told. One of the things that he didn't talk about, and we just didn't have time for, is that it bothered him that his parents weren't sufficiently attentive and he rebelled. And if you said what caused him to fall into this white gang, part of his problem, and he knows it's his problem, not his parents, but he never felt like he was getting the attention that he needed from his family. And when these white Nazis showed him some respect and attention at the age of 14, very vulnerable window, he kind of latched on with these cool kids, and one thing led to another. Not his parents' fault, right? But he really did, for most of his life, cite the bad parenting that he got as his excuse for what became a him. And then, lo and behold, he has a kid himself. He gets his 18-year-old girlfriend pregnant. She doesn't go away to college. They decide to have a family. When things get really bad after the first kid, they decide that the solution is to have a second kid. It's so bad. Their marriage falls apart, and he realizes, because she reminds him, that he is being to his kids the parent that his parents were to him. You're not there. You're not attentive. You don't appreciate us. Your kids need you, and where are you? In fact, the same thing happened with his brother. This is the point I'm just about to make, that his little brother looked up to him. There was enough in years that his little brother idolized his older brother, and he was always wanting to play. Buddy, his brother, was always bugging him, but he was always pushing his brother off because he either had a girlfriend or he was so involved in the Nazi youth movement, the white supremacy thing. I mean, he fell into that at the age of 14, and there's his little five-year-old brother saying, hey, will you play with me? And he loved his brother. And he wanted to be there for his brother, but he was distracted by these other things. And so then he goes off and makes these bad choices, and he's always away, and then he gets married, and he gets his own apartment. And now he's trying to reconnect with his brother, who himself is falling into the Nazi movement, the white supremacist movement, even as he is getting out of it. He's sort of finally sobering up and realizing, boy, this is a stupid thing. And now he goes home. And there his brother is, with short haircut and the tight jeans with the Doc Marten boots laced up, and he's sporting Nazi insignias and stuff like that. He tries to talk his brother out of it. He said, look at me. I'm your cautionary tale. And his brother tells him to go pound sand. He said, you don't know what you're talking about. Now his brother hates him, and he won't listen to him. His brother gets arrested because he's fallen into drugs. And when his brother finally gets out of jail, he gets shot and killed in a drive-by shooting from a rival gang. And when you ask Christian Piccolini what is it that motivates him today, he said he still feels the guilt over that. It's the very last pages of his book, which is just shocking on many fronts. And the other interesting thing about Christian is that the reason he was picked on so much as a kid was because he was just small, a very little kid. And his family was immigrants. They were from Italy, and he just felt so much the outsider. He was always picked on by the bullies in school. And in the beginning of the book, he tells the story about how he went through one of those classic bully moments in the schoolyard. The big kid is picking on him. The big kid is always picking on him. They're always beating him up and stuffing him in the locker and stealing his lunch money and all of that stuff. Actually, everybody brought a lunch from school for school from home. But because his parents were always working and they just weren't like other parents, his mom would always run to McDonald's, get him a Happy Meal, and bring that to school, which you or I might like. But it always cast him as different, and he hated it. He hated that at lunchtime, there'd be his mom walking in with her fancy high-heel boots, clicking down the hall and handing him a Happy Meal that the kids tortured him over. He hated that. One day, he said or did the wrong thing, and the bully at school said, I'm going to meet you after school, and you're going to get your whooping. And so he knew he had to go. Otherwise, he'd lose whatever face he had. So after school, they all meet at the park, and there's the bully and the bully's buddies who are always picking on him too, and a whole bunch of spectators. And they're standing there, and the kid spits at him a couple of times. And finally, he realizes, I can't take it anymore. And he lunges at that kid, pulls his arm back, and pops him square in the lip. And then jumps on him. And the two of them are trading blows, but Piccolini's on top, and he's having the best of it. And he hears the kids in the crowd, including the bully's buddy, saying, hit him again, hit him again, hit him again. And he realizes that they're cheering for him, that the bully's buddies and all the kids in school are cheering on Piccolini. They want him to beat the bully. They were as tired of it as he was. And the next day, when he returns to school with a black eye and a fat lip, and by the way, so too did the bully, now he's cool, or at least a little cooler. Now he's hip again. The guy was fearless. When he was about 12 years old, he got a really nice bicycle. I'm trying to remember if it was because he saved his money from birthdays or if his parents gave it to him for Christmas or his birthday, but he had a really cool bicycle, and it got stolen by a few kids one day. And then he heard through the neighborhood that somebody else had seen his new bicycle at an apartment complex, some Section 8 housing or something like that. His dad was furious that he lost his bicycle, smacked him upside the head a couple of times, and he hated that, and he hated that he didn't have his bicycle, and he hated that he was so vulnerable. When he finds out that somebody else has his bicycle, he decides, I'm going to go ahead and get my bike back. And son of a gun, there it is on like the second floor of a balcony on an apartment, there's his bicycle sitting there. So he, all by his skinny little self, he walks up the steps and raps on the door. And a big black guy opens up the door and says, "What do you want?" He says, "That's my bike. Your kid, somebody here took my bicycle." He says, "Hold on a second." The guy turns around, calls out to the kid in the room. He says, "Hey, you steal this kid's bicycle?" And the kid admits that he did. And then that man, the boy's father, reaches his hand back and he says, hits the kid so hard he becomes airborne flying back. He says, "For a minute I felt bad for the kid, but mostly I felt bad for me because he shouldn't have taken my bicycle." But I mean, he was there ready to fight anybody and anything that opened the door over his bike. And then one last thing. When he's 15 years old, and now he is in the thick of it, and he's drinking and smoking and driving, he's 15, and he's nothing but trouble, and he and some of his nutty white Nazi pals decide a fun thing to do would be go to the University of Illinois and party. They show up at an apartment building, and the bouncer is an offensive lineman for the University of Illinois' football team. He's gigantic. And three of his other pals, also offensive linemen, are there. He's 15 years old. He's about 5'8", and he weighs about 150 pounds. And when they tell him it's $10 to get in, no, it's $20 to go in. And they say, "All we've got is five." They say, "You can't get in." He says, "Fine." And then they beat those guys up. Piccolini and a couple of his skinny little twerp pals who were fearless, who always threw the first punch and would not be afraid to grab a beer bottle and smash it over your head. They beat and sent the University of Illinois' offensive lineman to the hospital, jumped in their car and escaped. It's one page like that after another. It's 122, White American Youth. This is WGN. "Hey, John, that story sounds a lot like American History X," says Jerry on KS. Jerry, you're absolutely right. And the more I thought about Christian Piccolini's book, White American Youth, the more I thought about that movie, American History X, which is with Edward Norton. And by the way, the same narrative arc where the brother falls in with him, he's in jail, he gets out, tries to keep his kid brother from doing the same mistakes he's made. That's this guy's life in Blue Island and Beverly and Alsip. And it didn't happen in fiction, and it didn't happen 1,000 years ago. It happened in the 1980s and the 1990s. And he said that stuff is still out there. Yeah, what a story. What do you think of the ICE agents raiding the 7-Elevens? What do you think of that? My number is 312-981-7200. I want to talk about this after the news. You can call or text right now. But if you said, "Okay, are there illegal aliens in this country?" Yes. "I wonder where they are." That's where you'd go fishing, right? I mean, you might catch something there. So they raid several dozen of these things across the country in 19 states, including Illinois. The ICE agents show up and say, "Show us your papers. And if you don't have them, you get arrested and probably eventually deported to who knows where." The irony is that our fear of illegal aliens may be that they're, I don't know, soaking the land, they're not doing their fair share. But these are people that are working, some of them owning or managing 7-Elevens. An article in the paper today describes 7-Elevens as an entry point for a lot of immigrants in this country, legal and not. But okay, I'll open a franchise, that's going to cost money, and then I'm going to sell Slurpees and gulps to people. We're open 24 hours a day, and it seems to be a cash stream.
And then I'm going to pay these people with payroll checks that they're going to contribute to the tax rolls, right? Yeah. They're not being paid cash, I don't imagine.
No, I imagine most of them are. Maybe the family members are working for cash, because there sure does seem to be a lot of family members. I don't know if they're going to do this at Dunkin' Donuts either. I mean, I'm just thinking of a lot of the food franchise operations in the country that are often represented by people of color who you suspect have English as a second language. Huh, well, that's kind of suspicious.
I suspected that of you earlier when you were reading that commercial.
Not too good on the old English, is he? Maybe Williams, what's that all about? What's that all about?
Williams, a likely story.
Yeah, right, right. Where's his papers? But I can prove my citizenship, and that's no small thing. I mean, maybe it is to you, maybe it isn't to you. I'll put it to you this way. If somebody is owning, managing, or just working at a 7-Eleven, and they're not here illegally, do you want the United States federal government to show up and demand that they prove their residency, and if they don't, arrest them. Do you want us to do that? Because we are. The president promised you we would, and we are. So that must cheer you, or maybe you think that's just sad. Also, A.J. Jacobs, the author of a lot of really fun books, including Mr. Know-It-All and The Year of Living Biblically, wrote It's All Relative, Exploring Family Trees. The number two most searched thing on the internet is genealogy. Here's a factoid from the book, Steve. Why don't we marry our cousins? Why don't you marry your first cousin?
Because there is a risk to the offspring.
Right. What is the risk? How great is the risk?
The risk that kids will make fun of them at the school
because they have two heads, or just the social risk because your mom and dad are first cousins.
Yeah, I don't know what the risk is. Is it very small?
It's extraordinarily well. Maybe it's smaller. Maybe it's pretty high. I'll put it in these terms for you, as he does in the book. The chance that your offspring, if you marry your first cousin, will have congenital complications is the same as if you have a child after the age of 40.
Wow.
Which to me is very reassuring if you want to marry a first cousin.
Your cousin, right.
Or it's really depressing because you're over 40 and you still want to have a kid.
So what that says really is it's about being weirded out by it.
It's just a taboo.
Right. And that's right. And so he finally comes around to, you know what? I'm okay. If you want to marry your first cousin, that's on me. That's not on you. That's not on them. That's my problem. That's not yours. It shouldn't. Because then he said, think about this. He said, okay, suppose then, but we say, no, it's not fair to those future generations of kids. Suppose because he's into tracing your family tree through genetics, what if we discover that if you and I get married and have a kid, there's a high probability that your child will develop Alzheimer's? Well, shouldn't we then frown upon you getting married, maybe even not even allow it, as we do in some states, for you to marry your first cousin? We let people over the age of 40 have kids, and the only reason we don't let first cousins marry is because we think it's bad for those offspring. It's the same difference. And you could probably make a better case that some people should not be allowed to get married because their children have a higher probability of genetically transferred diseases. That's where A.J. Jacobs goes.
That is brilliant because we now have abilities to test for so many illnesses. And if we're preventing... Right.
Let's do this now. I said, call me and tell me what you think of the ICE agents raiding 7-Elevens. They did this in, Steve, do you know, I know it was in Illinois, I presume it was in Cook County, were some local 7-Elevens part of this roundup? I didn't see specifically in Chicago, the 7-Eleven.
I don't know.
7-Elevens distanced themselves, the company did, from the situation. They said the individual stores were franchises that belonged to independent business owners. ICE hoped to make a bold statement. It could hardly pick a more iconic target than 7-Eleven, says the Chicago Tribune. It's seen as a message to businesses. You'd better police your employees. We'll start with Irene. You're on WGN. What did you want to say, Irene?
Hello, King John. My question, I have two, actually. Did the inventor of the 7-Eleven franchising system, did he do something to irritate Mr. Trump, or did he refuse to pay him tribute, as they say in the Bible? Or did he agree with Mr. Trump's actions and basically supports what happened? And in which case, I have to decide what my actions towards 7-Eleven will become.
And thought about it that way. The president is capable of that sort of petty tit for tat. If I'm mad at you or your business, then I may enact policies that will harm you. But I don't know where the scorekeeping is on that one. I haven't heard the 7-Eleven CEO say anything, especially pro or con Donald Trump. Robert, you're on WGN. What do you want to say? Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
How can anyone have sympathy for an illegal alien who gets arrested for being illegal? What's the definition of illegal alien, if not illegal?
Oh, pardon me, Robert. Keep going. What do you want to say?
And the argument that they pay taxes is fallacious. They generally, I work for a small company. We have about 30 employees. We're unionized in part of it. generally, when they come in, they claim five or six dependents when they don't have any. So there's almost no withholding. I doubt very much that they file taxes. Because we're union, we have to make contributions to their 401ks.
Well, do you...
Their 401ks are associated with their Social Security numbers. Last year, we got sued by a guy from Ohio who one of the employees, when he left the company, took all his 401k money without having the withholding, and this guy in Ohio got charged for $40,000 that didn't have taxes paid on it. So they cause problems. They're illegal. Why should we have sympathy for criminals?
Robert, I appreciate your phone call. I'm going from you to Bert on line 3. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Bert. You're on the air.
Thanks, John. I just can't believe that people are saying what they're saying. This, I haven't heard anything like this since the stories I heard about what the Nazis did to the Jews and Gypsies and gays during World War II in Germany, where they would come into their businesses and their homes and yank them out and put them in jail. And this is exactly what President Trump is doing to the immigrants who are working and trying to make a living and trying to make a place for themselves in this country. I'm really upset about this, and I hope that there are more people than me who feel this way.
That's Bert. Thanks for the call. This is Jim. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Jim. You're on the air.
Hey, John. How are you?
I'm good.
My point is just probably like your grandparents. Mine came from Germany and basically came to make a living. They had no papers, if you would. Now we have all these people coming from, you name the country, without papers, supposedly illegal. But the problem is, who's going to do all that work? Because I know my sons and my daughter are not going to go out and cut lawns or blow leaves or shovel snow or do menial picking of crops. You tell me who's going to do all that when he throws everybody out.
That's Jim. Thanks for the phone call. From you to Tim. You're on WGN. Jump in there, Tim.
Hey, John, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think we're thinking about this all backwards. Again, I'm not Republican or Democratic, but if these people have been here for, say, 5 years illegally, okay, they came in illegally. The system allowed them to do that. But if they haven't done any damage, any harm, any criminal injustice to the United States, why don't we take a moratorium and say, okay, you are here illegally. You have 6 months to get yourself illegal to maintain your business, and then you can stay. Otherwise, we'll deport you. But why do we go in and raid them and say, because you came here illegally, you're running a business, you're contributing to the United States, which is what we are. I mean, we are entrepreneurs at right. So why force them to go away if they haven't done anything bad or illegal to stay here? Just get legal, become a citizen, and you can stay. I don't know why we have to force these people out. They haven't done anything wrong.
Yeah, Tim's on line one. Thanks for the call, Tim. My prediction is, by the way, the president and the Republicans and Democrats all sat down 2 days ago, and they're still sitting down today and trying to hammer this out. I'll predict that in a year's time, we will have an answer to this. We will have a resolution to that. I think the ICE raids will probably peter out because they've made their point, and Congress will have been forced to come up with some resolution to this. The question I asked the Mincing Rascals, we recorded it today, and I thought it was a pretty good discussion, was, would you trade a border wall for DACA? Would you say, okay, let's help these dependent children at least stay in this country? And in order to get that, we will give the president his wall, which Kellyanne Conway said the president just discovered, her word, discovered, that the wall does not have to be a wall. It's a 1,900-mile border, and it could be fencing, it could be enhanced electronic surveillance, and it could be some wall. But the idea that it's going to be a big, beautiful wall the whole way is a myth. Doesn't have to be that.
See, I think the Democrats take the trade, but they don't call it a wall. They call it a jobs program. It's an infrastructure. Just like, you know, they pass jobs programs where they build highways and things like that.
By the way, we put up fencing during the Obama administration. It's funny how we get caught up in the semantics. Remember Scott Adams, the Dilbert creator, who joined us to talk about his book? He's a big, big Trumpy. He said that one of the most brilliant things Donald Trump or any politician has ever done is call the wall. A big, beautiful wall. Because what does that look like? To you, it may be razor wire and a fence. To me, it may be a moat. To somebody else, it might be a wall made out of bricks. I don't know what you see when you see it, but you see that. And then you say, okay, Donald Trump, that's what I want. When in fact, he hasn't told you any. So he's able to serve all of his masters with a vague description. And then everybody's happy, even though in reality, a lot of people might not be happy. And now we're starting to see what that wall will and will not look like. That's a tough one for me. Would you make the trade? Get DACA done and then give him his toy.
What's $18 billion?
I don't think $18 billion is a lot. I think actually the number's higher than that, Steve. You think $18 billion is the number?
Well, the president says he could do it for less than $18 billion.
Hold on a second. Aleph! What will the wall cost? What are the estimates on the wall? Find out for me and report back, if you don't mind. It's 147. More of your phone calls here. Let's go to Jim on line 4. You're on WGN. Hi, Jim. Hey, you sound bad here, Jim. Let's see if we can work through your phone. What do you want to say? I'm sorry, Jim. I'm going to come back to you, but your phone's cutting out. Hey, Bill, it's your turn. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I support what they're doing. The reason is they are not immigrants. They are here illegal, overstayed their visas. If they could stay here this long to get a business or do whatever they're doing, they could have made themselves legal.
Okay, thanks for the phone call. Elif, how much does the wall cost? What are the current estimates on building a wall along the border?
According to the New York Times, the report said the wall would cost nearly $70 billion to build and $150 million a year to maintain.
$70 billion plus $150 million every year.
And that's from A to B, the whole wall.
The whole enchilada. I shouldn't have said enchilada, but the whole kit and caboodle. Not even sure if you should say, is it okay? Aleph, is it okay to say kit and caboodle? Is that offensive to anybody?
I don't know, John. I'll let you make that judgment call.
Yeah, good luck to me on that.
Elif is a little glitchy today. Have you noticed that?
I know. She actually, sometimes the software skips.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about phrases that we use and don't use anymore, and I was thinking of crisscross applesauce today. I remember when on this, I believe, very radio station, I discovered that we now say crisscross applesauce and not that other phrase.
What does that mean?
I don't know what you're talking about either. You shouldn't have brought this up.
Oh, no, I still don't know what it means.
When you sit with your legs crossed in front of you in a circle in grade school, the teachers tell the kids not to sit Indian style.
Oh, you but said
to
Chris.
Crisscross applesauce. Isn't that what that... I don't have kids. We used to sit Indian style.
Well, do have kids, John.
You just don't have young kids currently.
I know. My kids don't sit that way.
They're wonderful kids, too.
Well, do you guys know what you call that?
You sit in pretzel.
Really? Okay, I've never...
But I've called it Indian
What have you called
style.
Indian style? Yeah. Well, boy, you better not. You better not. That's a really bad thing to say. It's 150. This is WGN.
This winter, Goodman Theater brings the historic meetings of Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev to the stage in Blind Date. It's 1985. As the Cold War looms, the world's most enigmatic leaders come together to halt the arms race. The fate of the world depends on chemistry. Blind Date is a slyly comic look at the encounter that changed history forever. Blind Date by Rogelio Martinez, directed by Tony Award winner Robert Falls. January 20th through February 25th. Get tickets at goodmantheater.org.
I'm Jay Farner from Quicken Loans. The rate today on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.875%, APR 4.05%. But choosing the right mortgage lender means choosing much more than just a rate. Let me ask you, does calling the company with the best client service in America, with 11 J.D. Power Awards to prove it, matter? Does calling the company that invented Rocket Mortgage, the industry's most innovative, client-focused technology, matter? Does calling the company with 17,000-plus team members who are helping to rebuild the great cities of Detroit and Cleveland matter? Of course it matters. No wonder our clients have made Quicken Loans America's number one online lender. Call Quicken Loans today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com for the best mortgage experience on earth. That's 800-QUICKEN.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Taking care of yourself and your family is no easy task. Riverside Healthcare can help with a variety of primary and specialty care providers. Riverside has just the right help for you and your kids and your whole family. Over a dozen locations, including the newest campus in Frankfurt, they get it right. Get the right care at the right place at the right time. That'll make your life a lot easier. Learn more about the nationally recognized Riverside Healthcare at riversidehealthcare.org. Riverside Healthcare, putting well within reach. It's 1:52. Andy Field from ABC joins us after the news. We'll talk a little bit about Section 701 of the federal code, the thing where it says that if you are talking to a foreign entity on the phone, we get to tap that foreign entity and therefore secretly record your conversation. You know who thinks that's a good idea? The administration and the U.S. Congress. You know who thinks that's a terrible idea? The President of the United States. So where are we on that? Andy, after 2, and then A.J. Jacobs in the 2 o'clock hour. It's all relative. His story about something you're maybe doing, and that is tracing a family tree. It's 1:53. Where do we go next, Elif? I can't read the name. Is it to Danielle? Danielle, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I worked at a Mexican restaurant, and I was the only white person. I was the only person who wasn't a family. And I was the only person who got a paycheck. Everybody else got paid cash.
Wow.
So at the end of the week, they just took cash out of the register and paid everybody else. And I was the only one who got a paycheck. So it kind of made me sad. But they were so nice. Everybody who worked there was very, very nice. And I would hate to think that they got, you know, just all of a sudden one day they're like, all right, everybody has to go out of the country. So if they just, you know, made themselves legal and did what they had to do and paid taxes to, you know, support the country like an American does, that would probably be best. So I was very angry every time I got my paycheck and I knew I had to pay taxes and they didn't. You know, that made me very angry.
Two questions. Were you getting paid at the same rate, do you think?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, let's assume that you were. Do you know if they were U.S. citizens and were just stealing, or were they illegal aliens and stealing?
No, they weren't legal because, you know, my boss told me, oh, you know, they're not legal, so I have to pay them cash. You understand? And I was like, yeah, I got it.
I understand.
You know, and of course they were nice to me because if they weren't nice to me, you know, I'd probably make a phone call. You know, if you would think I would make a phone call.
Yeah, and in the old days, and by that I mean yesterday, nobody would show up. Now, a van may show up. Who knows? Man.
Yeah. I don't work there anymore. I haven't worked there for a very long time. But, you know, I can see where it would make people really upset.
Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you helping us.
Sure.
Have a good day. Hey, Matt, you're on WGN. What do you want to say? This is John.
Oh, great King John and Vice King Steve.
That makes you the king of vice, by the way, Steve.
I don't think I don't know that.
No comment. But, no, look, guys, there's not going to be any wall. There's not going to be any wall. Yeah, he, meaning him, may send people out to go bring some of these people and kick them out of the country. But there's not going to be any wall. It costs way too much money. There was never going to be any wall. And the only thing that he did was pull the wool over a good half of America's eyes. These people are rubes. They need to wake up. But I still love your show, Joe.
I'm glad you're listening. And listen, you want to do that? Will there be a substantive wall? Not 1,900 miles, but a wall, a new brick-and-mortar wall of over 457 miles. I say no. Bertrand, will there be 457 or more new miles of brick-and-mortar wall built in the one or two terms of a Trump presidency?
Yes.
I disagree. Time will tell. Okay, thanks for the call. We're going to Bill next year on WGN. Bill, what can we do for you?
Hi, good afternoon, King John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a little follow-up. I know with the ICE investigation and everything else with 7-Eleven, but if they really read into it, the original investigation for 7-Eleven with the corporate offices and everything else started under the Obama administration. So it's really just a follow-up, and ICE is taking advantage of the presidential support for his campaigning.
Right, and the answer to this is yes or no. Do you support them? Do you like that they're raiding 7-Elevens and arresting people who are here illegally?
No, I don't think so. I think that the government oversteps their bounds on certain aspects.
Yeah.
Like I stated, not knowing all the particulars of now their 7-Eleven is blaming that it's a franchisee.
Individual stores, yeah. Uh-huh.
Correct. And then, you know, so then we're going to go further. We're going to start going to look at our McDonald's, Burger King's, all the other large corporations.
Well, you think about it. There's more. It's not just 7-Elevens. Is that what everybody wants? Hey, I appreciate the phone call, Bill.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
45.
Here's John Williams.
Degrees will be lost in the next 48 hours. So Steve's right. I know it's raining, but get outside and enjoy it.
Lord have mercy.
Put on your galoshes and stomp around in a puddle or whatever it is you do in a rain. Although we're not saying a lot of snow. We're saying the temperature's going to drop and maybe we'll get some icy stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
A little sliding.
I just assume it happened right now and let's turn this stuff to snow then.
Well, that's bold of you since you have to get all of, what, 4 miles to be home?
Easy for me to say. I don't have a commute really to speak of that at least is impacted by snow. So Andy Field is on a phone line. Is Andy joining us? Is Andy not ready yet? He's going to call us in a minute.
Okay. Is he worried about the president's physical?
You think we'll ever see the results of that thing?
Oh, yeah. I think they'll show some.
He's not talking to us about the president's physical. Why did you bring that up? Is he getting it today?
No, that was why I jumped in there. The Trump audio of him saying he's getting the physical tomorrow, and he says it hopes it goes well because the stock market will crash if it doesn't.
Honestly, Steve, I was in and out, and I heard that part of it. I didn't know what it was the president was predicating the market
tomorrow.
On. So if we find out, oh no, you've got 24 hours to live, then the market crashes?
Well, that's what he said. He was kidding. I mean, the market's gone up a lot under him.
Are you kidding me?
Well, no, look at the numbers.
No, I mean, it's you cannot imagine a scenario. You could not have dreamed a scenario where the market would be where it is today. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, I don't care who the president is. I can't think of somebody who would have, by virtue of being president, gotten the market any higher than it is now.
Right.
That doesn't mean that it's there because Donald Trump's a genius, but I'm saying no. If Hillary Clinton was the president, would it be as high as it is now? I'll bet not.
No. I mean, remember, there may well be a cost to some of this down the road. A lot of this has to do with easing of regulations
that
and
is true.
a much more friendly environment in that way. So if you believe some of those regulations were good for the environment or whatever, that you know, you can retire a year earlier, but there won't be anything in the backyard.
Well, the president says he's not sure if he's going to cooperate with the greatest witch hunt in history, the Mueller investigation, and he's not sure he likes Congress reinstating the FISA Act, which lets the government secretly tape conversations that U.S. citizens have with foreign entities. It's where that dossier information came up, and he doesn't like that. I believe the administration's official position on it is that they want to go forward, and Congress is working on that. A version of it's passed the House.
Right. Well, no, wait a minute. I want to correct you. The dossier didn't come from a FISA warrant.
It did not?
No, the dossier was being paid for
by the Clinton campaign?
Well, the first by Republican donors, and then, you know, to defeat Donald Trump in the primaries. And then when Trump won the nomination, Global GPS or Fusion GPS, I think, had this up and running, and the Clinton campaign then picked up the funding. So when they say it was funded by Clinton, it was eventually, but it first was by Republican opponents of Trump. But that did not come from a FISA warrant.
But he does not like the FISA warrant because he said that was them listening in on the campaign.
Michael Flynn, perhaps. Or Flynn talking to Kislyak.
Andy Field from ABC News is following this story. Help us out a little bit, Andy. How are you?
I hope no one's listening in on this conversation.
I hope they are.
It's how we butter our bread, my friend. How are you, Andy?
Okay, all right. Everyone listen in right now.
Thank you.
Without a FISA warrant. Here's what's going on with FISA here. I mean, there's a bunch of things. First of all, when it comes to Michael Flynn, they were not wiretapping Michael Flynn. They were wiretapping Kislyak, the Russian ambassador. They heard him talking to an American about getting rid of sanctions that the president, President Obama, had just put in before the Trump campaign moved into the White House, before
right.
they actually took office.
That's what Steve was saying, and I remember that.
Right.
Keep going.
So here's the problem. So there are ways to unmask the American on one side of it if you think that that American is up to no good and colluding with a foreign entity to do something that may not be legal. That's why they unmasked it, and that's why they find out that Michael Flynn was not telling the truth when he said he didn't have any conversations with the Russians about getting rid of sanctions, which is why he has now pled guilty to lying to the FBI about this and why he was fired. So the president, who is saying this is a terrible thing because the FISA law lets spy agencies spy on Americans, that simply is not true.
Well, they do inadvertently. If you're an American talking to somebody we're listening to who's maybe a spy, well, then too bad for you. You get caught up in this thing.
Right. That is why we have espionage acts and so on and so forth. But as for this, what they call the 702 program, that's what the House passed today, or they reauthorized. That's part of the FISA program. And what that does, it has nothing to do with Americans at all. It's about the U.S. listening in on foreign actors who talk to other foreign actors, not to people here in the United States. That is that part of that bill. So the president this morning was listening to and watching Fox and Friends, who Judge Napolitano is on Fox and Friends, was saying, Mr. President, this is a terrible deal. And literally seconds after Napolitano said that, the president tweeted this. The House votes on controversial FISA Act today. This is the act that may have been used with the help of the discredited and phony dossier, which isn't true, to so badly surveil and abuse the Trump campaign by the previous administration and others. The president didn't even know what part of the bill they were passing, if that's...
See, that's where I got my information. Shame on me. I read that tweet. Here's another tweet from the president on this topic. Disproven and paid for by Democrats dossier used to spy on Trump campaign. Did FBI use intelligence tool to influence the election? At Fox and Friends, did Democrats or Clinton also pay Russians? Where are the hidden smash DNC servers? Where are the crooked Hillary emails? What a mess. Okay, he's just on a sort of tangential rant there, but he's
right.
lumping all of these things together.
And they have nothing to do with each other.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. Andy, I want the U.S. government to be able to listen in on foreign entities. And if they're talking to other foreign entities, all the more power to us. If they're talking to you or me or the president or Michael Flynn, I want them to be able to listen to and record that too. And I don't care what happens to people that get ensnared or caught up in that. Don't be talking to bad actors if you don't want to be caught. And if the government wants to prosecute these cases and you're a victim of it, too bad for you, says me.
Well, and so should say the president, who is sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution and the laws that are based on the Constitution, one of which is a whole series of espionage acts and terrorism acts that are supposed to be enforced here, which is why the FISA bill came out in the first place, because this all came about after 9/11 to give law enforcement agencies more tools to catch terrorists before they actually blow things up.
But he's calling it the controversial FISA Act today. What is the administration's position on the passage of this bill?
Well, just a couple hours later, when there was a storm of activity here on Capitol Hill of Republicans calling the president saying, Mr. President, you've got this completely wrong. This is not what we're passing today. We're passing only foreign surveillance of foreigners talking to foreigners.
Oh, I see.
And so later, literally a couple hours later, after these people are calling the president saying, what are you tweeting about? He came back with another tweet that said, with that being said, I have personally directed the fix to the unmasking process since taking office, and today's vote is about foreign surveillance of foreign bad guys on foreign lands. We need it. Get smart.
Get smart, dumb.
Was the title of a very funny TV show in the 60s.
Okay, so here's another tweet from the president, or maybe I'm rereading, again, one that we both talked about. But seven hours ago, the president tweeted, House votes on controversial FISA Act today. This is the act that may have been used with the help of the discredited and phony dossier to so badly surveil the Trump campaign and by previous administration and others. So he's lumping it all together there. He's saying they use this to listen in on me and they're going to pass it again today. And that's a bad idea. He should have just deleted that, but now he shouldn't delete it. It's a public record.
Well,
I guess it should stay.
He said it, and this came up in the briefing that just happened with Sarah Sanders, who once again often, and I hate to say this, but remember Baghdad Bob?
I do. We're winning the war, said Baghdad Bob.
Baghdad Bob was the spokesperson for Saddam Hussein in the middle of Baghdad while U.S. tanks are literally rolling behind him saying, everything's fine here. Nothing's going on. There are no American troops here while the American flag is waving behind him.
Yeah, yeah.
Very often, Sarah Sanders sounds that way. She is literally saying things that are demonstrably not true. And in this case, you could set a stopwatch to the time between someone on Fox and Friends telling the president, saying, Mr. President, reauthorizing this FISA thing is a bad idea. And literally seconds later, the president tweets this.
I'm going to start calling her Baghdad Sarah. So,
well, no, she's here in Washington.
Yeah, I know. Washington Sarah loses all the imports. So, so I just want to be clear on this before I let you go, Andy. So the Congress is at least passing a bill that will allow the government to monitor foreigners talking to foreigners, right?
Well, the House did that. The Senate also has to do it, and the president has to sign it.
And that'll happen.
Now the president says he'll sign it, and of course the Senate will pass it. But the more controversial part, and I don't know when this comes up for reauthorization, but I think they're still allowed to do this right now. That part will have to be reauthorized, and that is the same thing that ensnared Michael Flynn, the former national security advisor.
And that's what the president's worried about, because for all he knows, that may have be getting some of his campaign team members as well. He's not a fan of that.
The president's throwing all of this into one big conspiracy stew. He's talking about the dossier, which, by the way, Dianne Feinstein released testimony from a closed-door hearing the other day about this dossier. We don't still know everything that's in it, but we do know that the person who from Fusion GPS who paid for it, and then, of course, Democrats and Republicans at one time or another were paying them to do this. The Republicans, when they didn't want Donald Trump to be their nominee, and then later the Democrats picked up the tab later on. But sometime in the summer of July of 2016, during the election, the guy who did this dossier said he found information that was so disturbing, he on his own went to the FBI.
Right.
The Democrats didn't go to the FBI. The FBI didn't pay for it, and it has nothing to do with the surveillance.
Is that the P part?
The P, I don't know which part, I don't understand the P part. Oh, that tape. Oh, okay, now I understand. We're told, I've never seen the dossier, but I'm told that there is some salacious claims in there that the president was with prostitutes and such, which
I thought they literally, as a favor to the president, wanted to get ahead of that for him so that they'd better be able to react to
James, that's what James Comey did when the president first got into office. He briefed him. He said, this is an uncomfortable thing, Mr. President, but I have to tell you that this dossier is out there, and here's what's in it.
If you were working for me or if you were the U.S. intelligence community, I would want you to do that. There's no doubt about that.
And his body man said, right, even though nothing's been proven, his body man said that in that trip to Moscow, the meeting organizers did offer to send prostitutes to the room, correct?
The
guy who used to do security with him in New York and
I know I've heard the report. I don't know much about it, so I'm sorry I don't have that information.
We are done, Andy. I'll talk to you again another day. I always appreciate your reporting, and I really appreciate your being so helpful when you come on with us.
Anytime. Thanks so much.
Andy Field from ABC News. It's 2:21. There are, I think, is some remarkable local news about campaign advertising. I'm going to play for you a little audio from some campaign commercials. This is wacky. This is only in Illinois. Only in Illinois. Let's just sprint through a few campaign commercials.
Can I clean up after myself first?
Go first.
All right. So we were talking about that the body man for Trump,
right,
and the prostitute story. Here, this is from U.S. News. President Donald Trump's former bodyguard and White House aide told Congress that he rejected a Russian offer to send five women to Trump's hotel room in 2013 when the president was a private citizen and therefore the Miss Universe pageant. This was in testimony before the House Intelligence Committee. Schiller said he and Trump laughed it off. So that's what I was referring to, that piece did exist.
I don't want to hear any more about
that. I know, but I said that, and you guys didn't seem to know.
No.
I
I'm glad your memory's better than mine and Andy's, too. I just wish that whole thing didn't exist. You know, I don't want us to be there. Here's where we are in Illinois. The bar is so low for politicians and for political advertising, and now you're about to witness a little of it. So this is the new commercial that the incumbent Governor Rauner, I know you knew he's the incumbent, but it's just amazing to me. You ought to be able to, with the advantage of incumbency, especially as a Republican in this state, win without having to resort to this. But here's Governor Rauner painting J.B. Pritzker as a Rod Blagojevich crony in the new ad that's running. This is the actual unedited audio of one of those old Blago tapes that the feds had. And in this case, the other voice on the phone is J.B. Pritzker, who was then calling the then governor and asking to be appointed Illinois treasurer. Pritzker wanted to be treasurer, and this is part of their conversation.
Okay, so, but what if, and I'm telling you, this could happen, because I know how Madigan is. He says, I'll give you health care, I'll give you a capital bill, okay? I'll balance what works with you to balance the budget the way you want to do it. I'll raise taxes on people. And you make Lisa the senator, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That puts me in a moral dilemma, because of all of the prospective candidates, what dealing with her, suing us to support Bush kicking 35,000 poor people off of health care.
Yeah, I know.
You know, all that.
Do it. You should do it. I'd take that
morally repugnant. I'd probably have to do it.
I'd do it.
Okay, and then there's an AG I can appoint, JB.
Doing the right thing for the people.
Are you a lawyer?
Yeah.
There's an AG that I appoint.
Oh, that's it.
You see what I'm saying?
Oh, there you go.
I mean, don't rule that one out.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not promising. I'm just saying these are all scenarios.
And it says, Pritzker, corrupt for Illinois. Paid for by somebody else. Pritzker sounds really bad in that. If you break it down, he's not the bad guy in that commercial. But, boy, the guilt by association factor is
huge. Well, that's
huge.
What it is. The ick connects. Because if you listen to it sympathetically to him, he's just like, oh, my God. That's great.
Incidentally, in the original conversation that Blagojevich had with Pritzker, they weren't playing that music. That was added later on by the Rauner people, just so you know.
But what a good movie that's going to make.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I suppose it would be. I mean, because, you know, it's like, yeah, but what's the real reason to watch this? It is hanging in the balance, the United States presidency, and an important seat on the Senate. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, now, this is the Pritzker ad. That's the Rauner ad featuring Mr. Pritzker, but Pritzker's going to fire back. He's got JB highlighting Governor Rauner's inaction in the Quincy Veterans Home story.
The deaths of 13 residents at a veterans home in downstate Quincy is dominating the race for governor today.
But a new investigation revealed the problem still isn't fixed.
Critics are now questioning the transparency of the Rauner administration.
Legionnaires broke out at the home in 2016. At the time, Governor Rauner said this.
People died because Governor Rauner didn't care. Actually, people did die. The administration didn't handle it well. And you better believe the Pritzker people are going to remind you of that. Do you remember that story better than I do? I'm not sure if I was living in Illinois when that happened, but I wasn't thinking of that. And now they're bringing it up again. In fact, you know, Governor Rauner just spent time in that home now to demonstrate that he's connected to it and is trying to make it better. I did not see that one coming, but the smart people tell me, oh, that's going to be an issue. One other spot I just want to feature, because this was in the news today. Steve Bertrand's about to do the news. Are you going to do this story again, Steve, about the Rauner ad?
No, you can have it.
Well, so this is help me if I remember this correctly, because I just thought it was so weird. Governor Rauner runs an ad for himself, of course, saying Illinois is so screwed up that the other governors in the surrounding states are happy.
Right.
And that's his idea of a commercial that's going to get him reelected.
No, it's so weird on so many fronts. So the you had Scott Walker and this guy who's at Greitens in Missouri and Holcomb in Indiana, and they're all saying, thanks, Mike Madigan, you're doing such a bad job that we're getting all your money.
Okay, so here's part of that ad.
Our economy's on fire.
We're growing good jobs.
And we're growing union jobs faster than Illinois.
So we owe you.
Huge.
Hoosiers love you, Mike Madigan.
And that's paid for by Rauner, because the reason Rauner is an ineffective governor, life sucks here in Illinois, is because of Mike Madigan. It's
right.
Weird, but Mike Madigan's not running for governor.
But if you buy into it, then you have to accept that Rauner's ineffectual because he can't turn it around.
That's the only way I heard that ad, but everybody in the world said that was brilliant. Okay, what's the news on that ad?
And then in Wisconsin, can I tell you this, that Walker took heat because they said up there, well, Scott Walker just admitted it's not his policies, it's Illinois' bad ones that is bringing the jobs there.
And they're all smiling. These governors, you've never seen a happier bunch of white guys than these three governors going, hey, thank you very much, Mike Madigan.
So in Missouri this week, the governor is dealing with, he admitted to having an affair with his hairdresser.
Wait a minute, did you say that again? The governor?
Governor of Missouri
has...
Who's in this ad, you know, touting... Illinois' sloppiness, was admitted to having an affair after the ex-husband of the hairdresser came forward and alleged not just the affair, but that he had taken photos of the woman, the governor, had taken photos of the woman and threatened to release them if she ever talked about the affair. So he's now facing, he's admitted to the affair. The jilted husband is alleging blackmail as well, and which the governor of Missouri is denying.
So then Governor Rauner says, okay, now that ad looks bad because it's got me in bed with that guy, right?
Right.
So he's pulled that commercial. He's not going to run it
anymore. So he pulled the commercial. He's not running it. The one that said that he was an ineffectual governor.
Right.
He's pulled it because this very good-looking, this very handsome governor of Missouri, that's what you would think.
When you get endorsed celebrity endorsements, they're always fraught with peril because you never know. If something happens to the celebrity, then you look bad. If McDonald's has a celebrity endorsing their stuff and then that celebrity gets into trouble, as they often do, then you borrowed more trouble than it's
right.
worth.
I'm assuming the governor's campaign didn't pay these other governors.
No, but you would think that it would be a pretty safe bet to ask another Republican governor to come on your ad.
Right.
Not so much. Author A.J. Jacobs got an unsolicited note in the email from somebody who said he's on a kibbutz in Israel. He's a dairy farmer. He said, I think we're connected. Jacob's family's from Israel. He's Jewish. His wife is too. He says, well, maybe there's something to this, but maybe he wants me to transfer money to an account in Africa. I don't know if this guy's legit. Turns out he was. And he said, I've traced our family tree. And guess how many people are on our family tree? 80,000. And the guy said that if you connect this family tree to other family trees, which people do now, you have a world family tree, and that has millions and millions of names on it. And that it's possible that at some point, the whole globe will know its shared ancestry. In fact, Jacob says, we're all cousins. And as only A.J. Jacobs can, he then says, I know, let's have a family reunion and invite everybody because we're all cousins. And so it becomes sort of a family reunion meets TED conference about TED event where it's all about genealogy, which he says is the second most searched thing on the internet. You know what number one is. And look at the people that I see in his book are holding up signs saying, I'm a cousin too. I'm a cousin. I'm a cousin. Ricky Gervais, Olivia Munn, Nick Offerman, John Legend, Dr. Oz, Olivia Wilde. And the list goes on. Jason Sudeikis, Penn Jillette, Christina Hendricks. If I had to pick a cousin, I'd pick Christina. AJ, welcome back to WGN Radio. How are you?
I am good. So great to be back. Thank you, Cousin John, for having me.
Yeah, I guess we're related. What are you talking to us on? You've got a microphone wired into your phone there, right?
I do. This is, I was told, the best. We tried another one, so I'm sorry. You have to forgive me. As a family member, cut me a little slack on the audio. I apologize.
Twice you've used that already. So what's, do I have your thesis right? That, I mean, and you do that a lot. You go, well, I've got to give the guy a break. He's a cousin. Or you've got to give me a break. We're related.
Absolutely.
So is my description of your entry into this topic of genealogy correct?
That's absolutely correct. And by the way, I looked it up before you called, and there are about 433 John Williamses on the global family tree. So I'm sure you're one of those, but I'm not sure which. We'll have to talk after.
No, it's so nice of you to do that.
Sure. Listen, anything. I won't play the cousin card again.
There you go. You're about to.
I was so close. But yeah, this idea that we're all one big family, which we had been told when we were kids, I loved it. It's such a simple idea, but it's now that we can see it technically and concretely, it just blows my mind. It's like the ultimate social network to me. It's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. So some of them are a little ridiculous. Like, this is my literal connection to Barack Obama. He is my fifth great aunt. Husband's brother's wife's seventh great nephew. So very close, practically brothers. But you can do this with almost anyone on earth. And the big hope is that when people hear that they are related, that they will treat each other just a little bit more kindly, or at least less horribly. So that's the big picture.
So was your idea, though, to get people that you could demonstrate were on your family tree, that they were X number of links away, or were you just interested in any member of humanity coming to your family reunion?
Well, all 7 billion members were invited. But once you are there and give us a little information, thanks to these tools, thanks to these massive family trees and DNA testing, you can actually figure out how you're connected to pretty much everyone on Earth. So the idea was, come and we'll figure out how your family.
I've not been one to be interested in this sort of thing in the past, and I know you're not interested in trees and charts per se, but I found myself for the first time in my life getting interested in my family history a little bit the way you did, and that is, I'm interested in the stories. All I know, and I know so very little about my family, but I know that they're from a certain part of Europe and that my grandfather was a tailor in Pena, Illinois, but I don't know much more. But if I knew something specific, like my great-great-grandfather did this, and this is how he met my great-great-grandmother, and it's a sweet story, if we flesh them out, then I think I would be kind of curious. And that's what you discovered, right?
Well, that's it. I love the stories, and I can hook you up with some people, including one of my favorites, a guy who has a company called Black Sheep Genealogy, and he'll go to these conventions, and he dresses up in a prison outfit with the black and white stripes, and his whole specialty is to find the horrible people in your family tree, the rotten apples. And there is some sort of, it's like a badge of honor to have someone. And I've got a couple. I mean, I know Al Capone. I've got, I did get a guy who shot his partner at a pharmacy. So that was exciting. But yeah, to me, it's all about the stories, the bad, the good, just to show what the family has been through and just have a little appreciation that we've all got great relatives and we've all got horrible relatives. We've all got royalty, and all these people who say, oh, I'm a direct descendant of King Henry VIII. Listen, everyone, and if you go back far enough, has royalty. It's just a statistical truth. So that can make us feel better. We're all royal.
Well, you take this back every conceivable way, not just to royalty, but back to Neanderthal men and Homo sapiens and how they intermingled and then one branch dies off and one strain survives. And literally all of humanity today could probably trace their lineage back to a couple of ape-like creatures, human-like creatures, thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. And then you could go back further than that and say, where did that animal come from? Well, it evolved from a less sophisticated creature all the way back to a single cell that divided on a vent in the ocean millions and millions of years ago. I mean, you drew up a tree like that for your family, didn't you?
Exactly. I mean, we all have the same 1.2 billion great-grandpa or grandma. I don't want to stereotype the gender, but and it is. It's just a little like bacterium, and it lived near a volcano vent in the ocean. But we know it's the grandparent of everything on Earth. You, me, Donald Trump, Miley Cyrus, but also ferns and hedgehogs and everyone on every living thing because of the pattern of the DNA. And then if you go further up, we all do descend from an Adam and Eve. It wasn't the one, I don't believe, the literal biblical version, but about 200,000 years ago, there were these two humans who they bred, and we all have a little bit of their DNA in us. They weren't the first humans. There were other humans, lots of wannabe Adams and Eves running around, but these are the ones who survive in our DNA.
It's pretty fantastic to think about, isn't it? That all of us, literally the procreation of two creatures a zillion years ago, we are all the result of that. You said that we all, therefore, share, what is it, 99.5% of the DNA that you have is the same as I have, is the same as an Eskimo has, right?
Exactly. Some say it's even higher, 99.9%. But yeah, that's sort of the idea. And there is some evidence. It was a fascinating study at Harvard that last year where they took Palestinians and Israelis and they showed them how closely they're related. And when they, the people that they showed that were related were kinder to each other than the control group. So that is the hope. I mean, I don't expect this to end all wars because I have three sons and I see that they go at each other. They like scratch each other's eyes out. So, family does not always get along, but it gets along more than total strangers.
You went back and
that's part of the idea.
You went back and talked to the Hatfields and the McCoys too, which I thought was interesting experiment. But this is the thing though. So this all sounds fun and interesting and kumbaya. If we discover that we're all closer related, then maybe we'll be nicer to each other. But every step of the way you discovered was fraught with controversy. For instance, one way to trace your tree isn't just with the internet, but it's with these companies where you send a swab and then they'll trace your tree and tell you where you're from, but also they'll tell you about your genetic history. And that gets to be very controversial because sometimes people discover things that they don't like to know, like there's a Nazi history in the family and they cooperated, or that they have a disease that maybe they could pass along to other people. And what do we do with that information? Talk a little bit about some of the controversies that erupt with all of this.
Yeah, DNA testing is fascinating and it's huge. Millions of people are doing it and it's got its benefits, but it's also got its risks. And there's one chapter in my book where I talk to this guy. He lives in the Midwest, and he had eight siblings. And when they were adults, they all took these DNA tests and found that they were from eight different
fathers. Yeah.
They all assumed it was the same father. So it's like a Maury Povich show to the nth degree. And what was it really interesting is some of them took it better than others. To me, the real hero of the story is the father, who actually was not the biological dad of any of them, but he treated them all as if they were his biological offspring.
And we don't know in the telling of that story in the book, you didn't say if the father. So think about that. This is a couple. They have eight kids, all of them by different fathers. And all of the kids think that they're a nuclear family, that they are all of the same mother and father. Imagine if in your adulthood you found out that every one of your seven siblings is only a half sibling, that they are of all different fathers. How would you feel about that? And when you asked the woman who had all of these kids if her husband knew that he was the father of none of them, she didn't say if he knew, right?
It was actually, it seems that he did know because he did some strange things. Like he would introduce one of the sons to a man who turned out later to be the guy's dad. And the kid was like, why are you introducing me to him? And he was like, well, you know, I just thought you'd be interested to meet him. So I think he knew, but yet he still did it. And there's so many of these fascinating stories coming up. There's an interesting one where a guy I write about in the book, he's a weatherman in Texas, and he finds his biological mom. He was given up for adoption. He's a gay man married to another man, and she's an evangelical Christian. So it was all of the, you know, does she accept him? And she, you know, it's got a happy ending. She learns to accept him. But I imagine not all of them are going to be happy.
I got a couple of texts here. I have many texts here. Let me just read a couple before I let you go. John, I've read every book that A.J. Jacobs has written, and one is better than the next. I love them all. He's terrific, terrific writer, funny as heck. I couldn't agree with you more. I've read them all. No, you know, I have a list of names here in front of me. Oliver Sacks, Malcolm Gladwell, Bill Bryson. These are all my favorite authors. They're people who tell me how the world works, and I'm always enchanted and entranced by what they write. You're in that group.
Oh, my goodness.
But what you do that's different is you make it personal and funny. You have a whimsical way of relating extraordinary amounts of information. This book is a personal journey of yours, but it's also really informative. And that's a gift, AJ. You're a lot of fun.
Oh, you are the best. I always love coming on. And now I think I should come on every day because it's such a good, so good for my ego. I feel great now.
Well, how is your wife, Julie? So in all of these things, like the know-it-all, you write the know-it-all. It's about you reading every word in every in A through Z of an Encyclopedia Britannica. It's a Herculean task. It can't be done. You're carrying around the S volume for weeks at a time. And not only is it burdensome to you and your family that you're always distracted or carrying around volumes of encyclopedias, but you won't shut up. Now you're the most annoying guy in the room because something comes up and you go, you know, I just learned X, Y, and Z. And your wife goes through these things with you time and again. I want to meet her.
She is a saint. A lot of people say it, and I agree. I will say that one of my books, The Year of Living Biblically, is going to be a sitcom on CBS starting in February, and the actress who plays my wife is very attractive, as is my wife, but this woman is 2 inches taller than Julie, and Julie has always had this thing about being short, so she is very excited to be taller, at least on screen.
In The Year of Living Biblically, you decided to follow the tenets of all the major religions for a year. Do I remember that correctly? Judaism, but then you also explored Catholicism and Hinduism and all of those, right?
Actually, I never got into Hinduism. It was mostly just the Bible, the Judeo-Christian. But yeah, both Old and New Testament.
I was exhausted for her. I was exhausted for her when you got done with that experiment. A.J. Jacobs' book is called It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. And the fun thing about the book, too, is it's punctuated along the way by the 52 weeks of planning you went through to plan the family reunion. My time's up, A.J. I've got to run. But did you break the world record for the largest family reunion?
Yes. Not to spoil it, but I broke that I had the most people around the world in one reunion.
Oh,
I didn't have the most people in one place.
Your reunion was to reunions what Donald Trump's inauguration was. It wasn't to inaugurations. It wasn't the most people in one place, but if you include the internet, it was, right?
I have never been compared to Donald Trump a reunion, so, but yeah, you make a good point.
I'll let you have that.
I'm not a fan, but you make a good point.
Come to Chicago sometime. Are you going to be in our city anytime soon, AJ?
I don't have plans, but next time I'm there, I would love to see you. And I promise next time you have me on, I'll have a better microphone.
Come to WGN Radio. Don't go on the Steve Cochran Show. Don't go on with Bill and Wendy. Don't go on with Justin Kaufman. Don't go on with Ro Khan. Come on with me, John Williams, okay?
I hate all of those guys.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear. Well done, AJ. We'll visit again.
Thank you, John.
Bye now. Among the texts, John, through Ancestry.com, we found a relative who claimed to be a spiritual medium and that we are also related to the current Prince of Sweden. Such fun. John, listening with great interest, I started exploring my family and discovered that I am part of the A.J. Jacobs tribe. From the 813 area code, John, you've got legal documents to prove each person. It's not just the internet. Ship records, war records, birth, church records, plus DNA, says Pat. Thank you, Pat. A.J. Jacobs' book also just goes in so many different directions. For instance, he talks about Romeo and Juliet and how these ill-fated lovers discovering that they could not stay married or that their relationship wasn't going to happen, and they, I don't want to spoil it for you, but they kill themselves, right?
What?
And so then he makes the case, and this is, again, him studying relationships and people and the intermixing of all of us, that if you think that that person is your one, your soulmate, the person you have to marry, and then for some reason they say, yeah, but they're your first cousin, that's awkward, or they're Jewish and you're Catholic and we don't want you to get married, it would be crushing to you. You would hate that. He said, but there are so many different people out there that another one will come along and you'll be fine. He imagines Romeo and Juliet, where Romeo just goes, ah, you know what? This is too complicated, Juliet. And years later, Romeo would have found another woman, and they would have been fine raising a family in Italy, having spaghetti, and everybody would have been happy.
There's only one true one. That's why it's the one.
See, that's the question. Do you subscribe to that? He does not.
I don't.
I'm married to the person I cannot imagine anybody else having made me happier. But we met with so serendipitously that if either of us had fallen into a relationship with somebody else, we would have been none the wiser. And I suppose Brenda would have been as happy with somebody else, and I guess I would have been too. I mean, it seems so inconsiderate to the person you're with, but I think I'm with AJ on this one. Violetta, you think it's the one person and that's the one, right?
Oh, no, but I think if someone thinks they're with the one, then there's no convincing them they're going to find someone else.
I think you're right about that, too.